There's a book in the Bible where the name of God is never mentioned. It's the book of Esther. But even though God's name is mentioned nowhere in the book, you sense his presence everywhere, controlling what happens. It's like a dollhouse where the top has been removed, and some big father can lean in, move the people around, rearrange the furniture, and do anything he wants. That huge father nowhere appears in the dollhouse, yet he controls everything that happens. That's how it is in the book of Esther. You don't see or hear God there, but you sense his presence dominating everything. This morning we're going to look at the story of Esther through the eyes of one of the minor characters of the book. The man is on the palace staff, an attendant to the king. He's on the inside. He knows everything that's going on. How would this man, who never hears the name of God and yet sees everything that happens, view it? What sense would he make out of it all?
My name is Harbona. My job? Well, it depends on what country you're from. In Britain, I would be a personal valet. In your country, I would be a male private secretary. In my country, I am Harbona, chamberlain to Xerxes, king of Persia. At first, I hesitated to take the job because you never knew about Xerxes. One day, everything would be going great. You'd be good friends with him. And then all of a sudden, without warning, he'd turn on you. And it would all be over. For instance, Pythias, one of his leading officials, once offered Xerxes $4 million to pay for one of the Persian military campaigns. Well, Xerxes, he was so overwhelmed by that generosity that he refused the money. And he even gave Pythias a gift. But when Pythias began to hint that maybe his oldest son could be excused from the campaign, well, Xerxes was so infuriated, he hacked the boy in two and he marched his armies between the pieces. That's what I mean when I say you never knew about Xerxes. Another time, a storm at sea destroyed 300 of his ships. Well, Xerxes grabbed a strap. He went down to that seashore and he beat the sea 300 times. Once for each ship. So you can see why I hesitated to take the job. But I took it and I made up my mind that I would get along with Xerxes. I would never cross him. I would never rub him the wrong way. I would just sort of go with the flow. But let me tell you about a series of amazing coincidences that have happened lately in Persia. It's been the most incredible chain of events. It all started after what we call the Bay of Salamis fiasco. Xerxes was making a bid to take over Greece. He was doing really well, too, until in one battle, the Bay of Salamis, he lost his entire naval fleet. Xerxes himself had to sneak back to Persia on a fishing boat. For the longest time after that, he was down in the dumps. He moped around all day long. No interest, no spark. And then he started talking about Vashti. Poor Vashti, how he'd done her wrong. Well, I'll admit, it had been an unfortunate affair. Vashti was the queen that he'd gotten rid of. But what's past is past. It wouldn't do any good to mope about it. I thought to myself, something's got to be done to put some life back into Xerxes. I know. Women! Women, and lots of them! That ought to get his mind off of Vashti. And so I told Xerxes my idea. Xerxes, why don't you gather beautiful young virgins from all over the kingdom. You can bring them right here to the palace. You can get to know them. And maybe you'll even find yourself a new queen. You know what? Xerxes went for the idea. And it wasn't long before we had the best looking girls in all of Persia right here in the palace. Oh, it was great. The whole thing did wonders for Xerxes. But there was one girl in particular who caught his eye. Pretty soon he was spending all of his time with her. And really, she's the only girl that he cared about. The girl's name was Esther. As far as I'm concerned, he chose the best one. A real beauty. Strange thing, though. Esther didn't look Persian to me. She had this dark complexion and, well, what difference does it make? She made a good-looking queen. And Xerxes was back to his old self again. As I think about it, things went on pretty well for the next 5 years or so. Till one day when Xerxes was holding court, in hopped Haman. Now Haman was the king's favorite. He was rising rapidly in our State Department. He was actually number two man in the entire kingdom. I tell you though, I didn't care much for Haman. I didn't trust him. I never told that to Xerxes, though. You know, go with the flow. Anyway, Haman had this whole speech prepared for Xerxes. Xerxes, gathered throughout your land are a group of people who are very disruptive in nature. I believe it's to your best interest not to continue to tolerate them. They've got their own peculiar laws. They don't pay any attention to our Persian ones. Now I suggest that we pass a decree that they all be destroyed. And I will even use personal funds to take care of the matter. Well, you know what Xerxes said about that? Sounds like a good idea, Haman. Follow through on it. He didn't ask any questions. He just went for it. It's just the way Xerxes was sometimes. Never knew with Xerxes. But as I thought about it, it wasn't Xerxes who puzzled me as much as it did Haman. I couldn't figure out what he was getting at. So I decided to look into it. A friend of mine is a tutor of one of Haman's sons. And so I was able to get the inside scoop. You know what it was? Haman was so irritated by one member of that race that he wanted to destroy them all. Here was his problem. In Persia, we have what we call a citizens' council. The council is made up of all the representatives, the national groups in the land. Every group selects their own representative. Now, Haman's job as number two man in the kingdom was to check in on the council, make sure everything was going okay. Whenever Haman came in, all the representatives got up and they bowed down to Haman. Except for one. The Jewish representative who just sat in his chair. And that's all Haman saw. All the representatives bowing down. And the one representative who sat there in his chair looking at him. And Haman thought to himself, okay, Mr. Jewish representative, I'll get you and your people. He wanted to destroy them all. I saw a copy of the decree and it was brutal. Destroy, kill, annihilate all Jews, young and old, women and children. Confiscate their property on December 13th. I mean, you couldn't misunderstand it. Destroy them all. That ought to do it. On December 13th, women and children, young and old, destroy them all. I thought to myself, those poor Jews, they've only got 11 months to live. But as I thought about the whole thing, it didn't make any sense to me. As far as I know, the Jewish representative didn't bow down because it had something to do with his religious beliefs. But we Persians, we've always been tolerant of other people's religions. That Haman, he gets my goat. I thought about saying something to Xerxes about this. But why stick my neck out? It was too late anyway. The decree was already circulating throughout the land. A couple days later, I found myself on the second floor. I was by an open window when I heard a loud commotion out in the courtyard. I looked out the window and there was a man making this awful noise. He was wailing and screaming. And I thought to myself, somebody's got to tell that guy to get away from the palace. I mean, he was a mess. His hair was all tangled. His face was smeared with ashes. His clothes were all torn. And as I was going to the stairs to go down, I ran into Hatak. Now, Hatak was the queen's attendant and he seemed to be going the same way I was. And so I asked him, Hatak, where are you going? I'm going out to the guy in the courtyard. The queen wants me to take these clothes out to him. All right, go ahead, take him the clothes. And when you're done, tell him to get away from the palace. And I thought to myself, oh, that Esther, she's all heart. I mean, how many queens would care about a bum who needed new clothes? Oh, Esther. But then I saw Hatak coming back, and he had the clothes with him. Hatak, what's the matter? Weren't they his size? Harbona, do you know who that is? It's the Jewish representative. Oh. Well, I guess he does have something to holler about. He's probably seen a copy of the decree. But why come around here to the palace? Why come here? I don't know. He just gave me this paper, and he told me to see Esther about it. Here, let me see that. Yeah, it's a copy of the decree, all right. But see, Esther about it. What has she got to do with this? I don't know, but he just gave me the paper, told me to tell Esther to see Xerxes about it. See, Xerxes about it? He doesn't know anything about this. Well, he knows about the decree, but he doesn't know it's against the Jews. And besides, why go through Esther? This is none of her business. I don't know. He just gave me the paper, told me to go in. I better listen to him, all right? Strange. Couldn't make sense of it. Later that day, I ran into Hatak again. And he looked as if he'd seen a ghost. Hatak, how's it going? Oh, Harbona, you'll never believe it. The queen, she's a Jewess. What? You're kidding, right? No, the queen's a Jewess. I know it for sure. Well, no wonder she didn't look Persian to me. Yeah, she's a Jew. And when I showed her the copy of the decree, she turned really pale. And she didn't want to go in and see Xerxes about it. She said this was not a good time. Harbona, you know he hasn't called for her in over a month now. I know. He's having one of his moods lately. Yeah, and so she told me to go out and tell the Jewish representative, his name's Mordecai, and he's her uncle. She told me to tell him that this was not a good time to go in and see the king. And if she went in uninvited, he could do something severe. But he told me to go in back and tell Esther that, good time or not, the decree was against all Jews. And that being queen wouldn't even save her. And then he said maybe she'd become queen for such a time as this. Well, hey, Tech, what's she going to do? Well, I guess she's going to go in and take her chances and see the king. Harbona, do you think we ought to say something to Xerxes about all of this? Are you kidding? No, no way. I'm not about to get caught between Haman, Xerxes, and Esther. Let's just let events take care of themselves. But I thought to myself, boy, oh boy, things are getting interesting around here. Haman's got a decree out against all of the Jews because of Mordecai. Only he doesn't know that Esther's a Jew and Xerxes is in the dark about the whole thing. Turns out I didn't have long to wait. A few days later, Xerxes is holding court. The side door opens. It's Esther. And man, does she look good. She's really fixed herself up. Well, Xerxes takes one look at her, quickly lowers his scepter. As Esther comes forward, Xerxes can tell that something is really bothering her. Oh, you ought to hear him. He can be really gentle when he wants to be. Esther, what is it? Esther, is there anything I can give you? Name it, Esther, and it's yours. Well, I thought she would come out with it right then, but she didn't. Later I saw it was better because Haman wasn't there. Rather, she said that at noon that day there was a lunch. And would Haman and Xerxes join her in the queen's compartment? Well, when lunchtime came, Xerxes again tried to find out what was bothering Esther. But she wouldn't tell him. And I thought to myself, Esther, why don't you just come out with it? What are you waiting for? As I think back, it's funny that she didn't tell him at that first lunch. Because a few very interesting things happened before that second lunch. It's really strange the way all these things work together. If she had told him at that first lunch, it would have been too soon because of the events that happened between those two lunches. Now, the first thing that happened, and I got this from Haman, or the tutor at Haman's house. Haman practically floated home on a cloud that day from lunch. He had this huge party, invited all of his friends over. When they got there, he told them his personal success story, how much money he had made, how he'd been promoted so rapidly within the State Department. And today, the climax. Lunch with royalty. The only moth in his Persian rug was Mordecai. Mordecai would still not bow down to him at the council meetings, even with the decree out. So Haman and his friends decided that night that Mordecai would have to go before December 13th. They made a huge gallows out of a tree in Haman's backyard, and they decided first thing in the morning, Haman would talk to Xerxes about hanging the Jewish representative on it. Now, the second thing that happened, and this is really weird, Xerxes had insomnia. He usually sleeps like a baby, but he couldn't sleep that night. I heard it about 3 o'clock in the morning. Harbona! And I was in the room next door. Yes. Harbona, I can't sleep. Bring something to read to me. How about the memoirs of your reign? That'd be fine. So I got up, went and got the scrolls, and came back and started reading. And after about 15 minutes, I came across a very interesting paragraph. Something about the Jewish representative on his way to one of the council meetings, overheard a plot to assassinate the king. Well, he tipped off Esther, he foiled the plot, and he saved the king's life. When I read that, Xerxes perked up. Harbona, did we ever do anything to reward that, what's his name, Mordecai? Mordecai. Whatever. Did we ever do anything to reward him? So I looked through the scrolls and... No. We didn't do anything.
Well, Harbona, first thing in the morning, you remind me, we'll take care of that oversight.
I thought to myself, this is a fine how-do-you-do. Haman's going to hang him. Xerxes is going to honor him. And I can't wait till morning.
Well, sure enough, first thing on the throne, Xerxes didn't need any reminding. Are any of my advisors available?
Someone said, Haman's outside.
Send him in!
Well, in comes Haman, raring to tell the king about his plan to hang the Jewish representative. Doesn't get the first word out.
Haman, there's a man in my kingdom who I owe a lot to. I am deeply indebted to this man. And I want to, in some way, publicly show for all to see how much I owe to this man. Haman, do you have any ideas?
Did Haman have any ideas? He thought it was himself. Yes, Xerxes. Well, let me see. To do it right, whoever it might be, I would... I would place the king's ceremonial robe on him. And I would place a gold crown on his head.
And Xerxes, I would have one of your leading officials put him on the king's stallion, parade him around the public streets, yelling, "This is a man the king wants to honor."
You know what Xerxes said about that?
"That's good, Haman. Listen up. You're a leading official. You do that for the Jewish representative. Mordecai's his name. He'll be getting out of the council meeting right about now. You meet him there with all the trimmings you mentioned. Oh, and Haman, shout loud. For I owe this man a lot."
Oh, I wish you could have been there. Haman was beaming one moment, and the next he looked whipped. Well, Xerxes turns to me and said,
"Harbona, what's the matter with Haman? Doesn't he feel well?"
"No, I don't think so."
Well, as the morning went by, we all heard glowing reports about Haman's little parade. And when noontime came, we all went to the queen's quarters for lunch.
When Haman showed up, he looked a little peaked. But he'd pretty much pulled himself together by then.
It was a good lunch. Haman, Xerxes, Esther. And while they were lingering over dessert, Xerxes turned to Esther. Said, "Esther, something's been bothering you for the last few days. I want you to tell me what it is. Esther, is there anything I can do for you? Esther, is there anything I can give you?" And I thought to myself, here it comes. And sure enough, "Yes, Xerxes, there is something you can do for me. There is something you can give me. Give me my life and the life of my people, for we are about to be destroyed, killed, and annihilated."
I wish you could have seen Haman's face. Every one of those words was like a slap. And then Xerxes.
"Esther, what are you talking about? Who would dare do such a thing? Name the man."
"Haman."
"What? Haman? Against the... Oh, no!"
And that was too much for Xerxes. He had to get up and go out to the patio to think it over. And when he left the room, Haman just fell apart.
Esther, I'm so sorry. I had no idea. I never would... Esther, please.
And she just turned her face and walked away.
Well, Haman got up, went to where she was, got down on his knees, began to beg her.
She wouldn't listen. He started shaking her. She pushed him away. Right at that moment, Xerxes came in the room, took one look, got the wrong idea. Will you molest the queen in my own palace? Cover his face! And that was it for Haman. When you cover the face, when you drop the death veil, it's all over. That was it. I spoke up then. I usually didn't, but I thought it was safe. Xerxes, Haman had fixed that tree in his backyard to hang Mordecai on. Makes a high gallows. Hang him on it! And they did. They did. They also passed a new decree. In Persia, you couldn't take back a former one, but you could pass a new one to balance it off. The new decree said that on December 13th, the Jews could do whatever they wanted to defend themselves against anyone who came to do them harm. It also said that they could band together, they could take the initiative against any of their enemies, and the government would ask no questions. Oh, you should have seen. The Jews were just dancing in the streets when that one came out. A little later that day, I was on the second floor of the palace, and I was by that window, and I was thinking back to the incredible chain of events that had taken place. Esther being picked queen out of all of those girls. Mordecai, her uncle, who saved the king's life. Xerxes, who had insomnia on just the right night. And as I looked out that window and I could see the Jews dancing in the street, I looked over the palace wall and I could see Haman dangling from that tree. I thought about all of these coincidences. And I thought to myself, those Jews, they sure are lucky. And now, to the God who never sleeps, to the God who never slumbers, to the God who knows you're coming in and you're going out, to the God who hovers around you to preserve you from harm and to give you the future He's planned for you, praise and glory be to our God, our good God. Forever. Amen.
There is no word for you that we can ever become and fathom to come up with. You are indescribable. It's so true. And you work in such a mysterious way. As Esther, Mordecai, all those people found out. Lord, as this year ends and a new year begins, a lot of things will happen to us. A lot of things will change. A lot of things we want to change. But none of it will happen unless we let you work through us. Lord, I just ask that we enjoy the rest of this beautiful Sunday that you bless us with. Have a great time hanging out with family and friends tonight as we celebrate the end of a great year and hope and pray, Lord, that this next year coming up is even better and that your word is just so dominant in the year of 2007. In your name I pray. Amen.